Not accomplishing my college dreams was a hard to put my head down at night. Every single where I looked, I could just all I could think about. And so I think that was kind of my initial drive to coach was like, I don't want people to feel what I felt.
We can endure anything and adapt and pivot and change. Wrestling gave us that ability.
I would say nothing in life has impacted me more than the things wrestling has taught me in terms of self-reflection, resilience.
Toughness. Some guys have it, some guys don't.
Adversity, 100%. How to pick myself up and be a man after I failed.
And everything that has shaped my life and where I'm at today would not be there without the values and basically the lessons I've learned through the sport of wrestling.
For me, wrestling saved my life because it allowed me to focus and channel my energy.
We're fortunate if you wrestled, because if you wrestled, natural talent helps, but it's 5% of the ingredient. It pales in comparison to heart and technique and effort.
It humbled me, taught me humility. Nothing can humble you more than wrestling.
I think it's the learning to adapt, right? You learn how to adapt, you learn how to solve problems.
You know, if I look back my time that I spent wrestling, if it gave me one thing more than anything else, it's mental toughness.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Wrestling Changed My Life podcast. It's your host, Ryan Warner, coming to you from Chicago IL. Our guest today is Neil Erzman, head coach of Little Rock, Arkansas, the first and only coach in that program's history. Little Rock, Arkansas introduced wrestling in 2018, and this year, they won the Pac-12 championship. They beat Arizona State, Oregon State, Cal Poly, and they're looking really good heading into this postseason. It was awesome to have Neil on the podcast, and I can't wait for you to hear it. Fan of the week goes to our friend Phil Waugh, channel account manager at Wiz, Illinois State University grad, resident of the greatest city in the world, Chicago IL. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast, Phil. We greatly appreciate it. Last but not least, folks, this episode is brought to you by Beat the Streets National, the umbrella organization for the Beat the Streets chapters, one of the finest organizations in the world. These folks are helping change life trajectory for folks in need through the great sport of wrestling. I couldn't be more proud to be associated with Beat the Streets National. If you want to support Beat the Streets National and you're going to the NCAAs, check out their Celebration of Impact. It's going on March 22nd, 3:30 to 7 in Kansas City, Missouri. Purchase tickets now at national.beatthestreets.org. And without further ado, folks, let's give it up for the great Neil Erzman. Neil Erzman, welcome to the podcast, Coach. How you doing?
Man, thanks for having me. It's good to be here. I appreciate you.
Pac-12 champs. Let's go, man.
Let's go, baby. Let's go.
What a season you guys are having, man. The 2024 dual meet Pac-12 champions. Just first of all, congratulations, man. That's incredible.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. It's been a fun season. It's been culmination of a lot of hard work. So it's cool to see it pay off.
And what's the feeling on campus? Like, is the AD coming to you saying, Coach, what's in the water? I mean, what's the reception been like on campus?
Well, the reception has been awesome. We got honored at the basketball game last night. There was, 2,000 or 3,000 people there. And, we're in the middle of an AD search and happened to bump into one of the candidates. And he was like, man, he's like, I've actually been following you guys. He's like, I'm a wrestling fan. And he's like, I've been at several wrestling schools. So not just people in Little Rock, but people across the country are, constantly saying stuff to us. And I've probably been on more radio shows, local radio shows and local TV broadcasts than I have in my entire 5 years being here. But it's been really cool to see the transformation of people in Arkansas and how they're more and more receptive to wrestling.
Yeah. And it's, we were talking a little bit off air. It's been a long journey, for wrestling to be in Arkansas in general. And then you got wrestling at every level. You got D3, NAIA, D2, and D1 obviously, and we just had Pat Smith on and he gave the rundown, but man, you guys are part of this movement and it's just like incredible to see it all coming together. And it's been 5 years, it's been a long journey. I mean, talk us through how you first got the call to maybe be the head coach.
Man, that's a I was actually just telling this story. I had some, you know, some dinner with some supporters on Wednesday night, and kind of a cool story. So we're in Cleveland. I'm at UNC, and Coleman and I just had the best year we've ever had since they took fifth as a team, and I think it was 94. And I remember it was right before the finals. We just kind of finished up. Chip Ness, I think, just took, I don't know, fourth, fifth, something like that. And they come over and they announce that they're going to start, that they're starting a brand new Division I program at the University of Arkansas at Little Rock. And I was like, what? I was like, Greg Hatcher's got to be involved with that. And so I remember I just immediately texted my wife and I was like, that sounds like a place for me. And, you know, she tells the story. You immediately text me and said, I want that job. And so I have to go back and try to find that text from about 5-6 years ago. But I remember, you know, we finished up the tournament. The next day I go to get on the plane and I think we're flying from Cleveland to Charlotte. I can't really remember, but Pat Smith was on the plane with me and he sat right next to me. Like, I mean, not exaggerating. If I'm in the aisle, he's in the middle sitting next to me. And I just remember going, I'm going to talk to this guy about this job. Like, I'm going to find out because he's got to be involved. He's right there in Little Rock. And so I asked him, he starts telling me, you know, the details of what they want to do. And I just remember telling him like, well, I'm going to pray about this, but I'm probably going to be kicking down your door and calling you, trying to get, you know, my foot in the door for this job. And so, you know, I mean, this is kind of a long story. So
we got time, baby. Let's go. Let's go. All right, did you knew Pat from us on Okie State? Were you guys friends or kind of acquaintances or?
So Pat was still recruiting when I got recruited. And then Pat left to go to Arkansas, like probably a few months before I got there.
Okay.
So Pat technically was in the recruiting process with me. And it was someone that, you know, I was very excited to work with. So yeah. I knew him. I didn't know him great. Kind of in that time period of when I committed to, you know, things going down, and him moving, he had left at that point.
Yeah.
So I never got to really build a relationship with him, but,
so you're on the plane with him.
And then, so I'm on the plane, we get home and I'm talking to my wife about it, you know, praying about it. And I sent the AD an email and said, you know, number one, thank you for being bold. Thank you for being bold in a time where it doesn't make a lot of financial sense. It doesn't make a lot of sense, you know, from a Title IX perspective and, you know, different reasons. And I said, but I just want you to know, I'm going to be applying for this job and I'm very serious about it. And I look forward to hearing back from you. Well, this is a long process. So from the time I sent that email in March, I didn't get hired until, you know, my technical start date was like July 18th or something like that. Right. So, I send the email and then I start calling Mr. Hatcher and he's like, well, you know, we're going to do phone interviews. You're going to do phone interviews. And I kind of called him so much that he kind of stopped taking my call. But I remember I just texted him and I said, if you give me 5 minutes, I'll tell you why Neil Erzman. And if you're still not interested, then I'll stop calling. Like I'll let this be. And so he immediately picked up the phone. He called me. I was like, here's why I think I'd be a great fit for this job. If I can get a phone interview with the AD, like that's all I'm asking. So I got a phone interview with the AD probably, you know, I would say May. And, cause you know, I mean, it took a full month and a half just to start the, you know, the process. And, wow. So I get a phone interview and I'm like, I freaking bombed it. I'm like, that was awful. I did bad, you know? And
was he busting your chops or like, was he asking tough questions you weren't ready for? Or what, why was it bad?
No, I just felt like I fumbled a little bit. Like I for some reason got nervous and it was my first time interviewing for a Division I head job. And I think I just kind of struggled under the pressure a little bit, you know, but apparently I did well. And, you know, they called me back like 3 weeks later, which is, you know, that's a grueling 3 weeks. Like most jobs don't take this long, but they wanted to go through the process. So they call me back and they're like, we want you to do an on-campus interview. And I was like, all right, awesome. And you know, during that time I was kind of like an emotional roller coaster. I was like, I'm not getting the job. They're not calling me back. I was trying to be positive. And you know, I was young. I think I was 29 years old. So I hadn't had a lot of experience in this. And so, they end up bringing me on campus. You know, I get a flight and I bring my wife and we have a new, and we, I think my son was like one at the time, my third child. So we get here like 11:30 PM. We get to the hotel at midnight and my son decides to be up all night and he's just on my back. He's like, dad, like keep me up. I didn't sleep one stinking minute before my interview and they picked me up at 7 AM. Right. So I have interviews from 7 to 4:30. And I just remember by the time my 4:30 interview started, I walked into the AD's office and I yawn and he's like, "You're yawning on your interview?" And I'm like, "Oh, this ain't good." You know? And so, you know, long story short, my interview goes really well. I really felt like when I left, I crushed it. I was who I am. I did not sell myself. I was exactly who I am as a person. And if they want someone like that, then it's a great fit. And so fast forward from, you know, probably end of May to, you know, 1st of July, I think it was like July, probably 6th or 7th, something like that. I have to go back and look at the, you know, the actual announcement date. But basically they call me and I'm doing camps at Carolina and I'm driving a golf cart down the road to go from the facility where we were having camp all the way to the dorms because we had a problem. And I see that the AD's calling me and I'm like, holy smokes. And I just looked at the person next to me and I think it was Bryce Hausman at the time. And I was like, I got to take this call. And I jumped off the moving golf cart because I was so excited. And he called me and he was like, "Hey, this is Chase Conk." I was like, "Yes, sir." He was like, "I just want to know if you're still interested." And I was like, 100% interested. He's like, "Well, we want to offer you the job." And he's like, "You know, would you accept it if we did?" And I said, unofficially, 100% yes. I was like, "But let me share this moment with my wife because we've moved clear across the country. We've had a lot of struggles and I want her to be a part of this." And so I called her and told her and she was crying and excited and called him back and accepted the job. And, you know, a few weeks later I was in Little Rock. So,
wow.
It's a lot of really cool moments in that.
And how often are you refreshing the old inbox in between those interviews, man? That had to be a stressful couple of weeks.
I mean, I was like this over and over and over. I was like, just like, what is going on? Like, why is nobody calling me? Why is nobody texting me? Like, I'm calling Greg. I'm calling Pat. And they're like, "Neil, we got nothing else left to do with this. Like, you got to leave us alone." It's all right.
Wow.
So it was an emotional roller coaster, to be honest with you.
And so how long after you got that call were you down in Little Rock?
So I think it was like 2 or 3 weeks later that we moved. You know, my official start date was like July 18th or something like that. And then I think we got here July 27th.
And what about the position excited you? Because you could have been at the NCAAs, you hear that and you go, "Man, that's going to be a really tough job for several years." Like Arkansas, right? That's not like a state we think of in the wrestling world. So what about that intrigued you?
Well, I think that, you know, I was able to be realistic about who I was and the things that I did and didn't accomplish in college. And when you looked at the landscape at the time, you know, people were really hiring big names. You know, Coleman got taken from essentially a volunteer position for 1 year to a associate head coach to be the head coach, right? And that was seemed like a common theme. And I was like, well, my niche is going to have to be something that fits my personality, that fits, you know, maybe where I'm from and how I can get into the areas that I grew up and just really pull people in. Well, starting something from scratch and being too dumb to understand how hard it was going to be was probably right up my alley, you know?
Yeah.
My dad always joked. He always said, "You've always worked a lot harder, not a lot smarter." And so I felt like when I heard the words Little Rock, I was like, "Man, that's not far from home. Kansas, Oklahoma, Missouri. That's my wheelhouse. That's where I grew up." And I was like, "Man, this could be a place that I fit. That I can wear my boots, I can wear my jeans, and show up to work every day, work hard, and really get into the roots of where I grew up and help grow something like this. So I felt like it was a perfect fit.
Yeah. And how long, so you get there and you're excited, and then how long into it were you thinking, what have I just gotten myself into?
Oh my gosh. So I just remember I got here and like we had, it's one thing to look at it as a whole and say, hey, look, we're building this facility. We're going to give you the full scholarships. We're going to work to be in a Power Five conference. Like those were all things that were, that were told to me. Right. And then you get here and the reality is like, we're trying to find you an office. So you're in the student center across campus and you're kind of like in an old closet, like that's your office. And I always joke, like it was me and the cockroaches hanging out. Right. Like I was back in the like back corner because they didn't have things in place yet. So I think at that point, reality hit. Like it was like, all right, I looked around and I was like, there's no one here and there's no one coming and I got to figure this out. And so that year was a tough year. You know, I did 75 away trips. I slept in my car a lot just to save money. And I think I had 50 plus official visits. Another probably rival, you know, that with another 50-ish unofficial visits during that time. And
you slept in your car?
Heck yeah. I mean, wow. Hey, look, I'm not the only one. I'm not the only one. There's a lot of coaches out there that have had to do that. You know, you're just driving through the middle of the night all the time and you got to pull over. You got to get some sleep. There's no point in paying for a hotel for 5 hours. So you just find a good gas station, park in the corner and lean the chair back and then keep on going, you know?
Wow. That's grinding right there, man.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't want it to be like I was like I know other coaches that have done it, you know, mm-hmm. and more, that's why wrestling coaches are special because they're willing to do that, right? So,
and did you have so I haven't been on campus, but you know, through the Jason Bryant series and through a bunch of videos, you know, you see the wrestling room. So, what you guys have now, standalone facility, or what's the mm-hmm. like the current state?
Yeah, we're a standalone facility. I got to be a part of the building process, which was really cool. I got to work with the contractors. I got to talk to them. Mr. Hatcher gave me full access on that. And he always jokes, like, I'll never let a wrestling coach be a part of a building again. But he's like, I'm glad we did because we did it right. And it's about 20,000 square feet. The mat room is 110 by 110 alone. We have a full weight room, locker room, lounge, offices, sauna, athletic training room, all right here in the wrestling facility. You really don't have to leave if you don't want, other than to go to class and go back to your apartment. So
nice.
It's a pretty functional, setup.
How long until you guys had that? Were you there like 1 year when that happened, 2 years?
Yeah. So we finished the project in September of 19. So our first few practices were at Pat Smith's Wrestling Academy for probably the first 3 weeks or so. And then we were able to move in, which was a cool day for our guys.
Wow, man. And when you're on the road, those early days, that first year, you know, what are those conversations like? Are you explaining like the vision for the program? Are you like going after like high caliber guys? Like what's that like?
Well, both. I mean, all of the above, right? You know, because the reality is, like, you start a new program, you're recruiting JUCO kids, you're recruiting high school kids, you're recruiting juniors, you're recruiting seniors, you're recruiting transfers. You're literally trying to get 24 people on the team so you can have a squad, right? And, you know, in our first class, we had kids that were placing the Ironman. We had kids that were, you know, if they would have had top 150 back then, they would have been in the top 150. But you're really just trying to get your message out there. And, you know, I really wish a guy like Joey Bianchi could be on here right now because he tells a funny story about how, you know, where our wrestling facility sits, it was on tennis courts. And I had it all marked out. Like I went to the contractor and I was like, where's the center of the building going to be? And it just happened to be like dead center of one of the nets, like right in between the poles. And it was already anchored down. So I was like, I had it circled and spray painted. And I was like, and I'd stand recruits around it. And I was like, all right, I want you to just play a game with me. And I was basically trying to paint a picture. I was like, you know, we're facing south right now, and we're going to be looking at the front door. There's going to be a foyer. We're going to have the biggest trophy cases you can imagine, because that's the dreams that we have. We're not here to be a program. We're here to be successful. We're not here to compete. We're here to win, right? And I was like, and look to the right. There's the sauna. There's the offices. And I had it all spray painted out. And I was like, this is where the middle of the mat room. This is where the war is going to happen every single day. And these dudes are looking at me like I'm crazy. And now they're like, man, it came true. Like you did it. I'm like, I didn't do it. I was like, God is good. This all happened, you know, because he put these things in place. But definitely a really, really cool story of just painting a picture for people was really what I did.
That's beautiful. I mean, and that's, you can just imagine the scene, right? Like, it was literally tennis courts that they built the facility on. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow. And, you know, when you think about your background, multiple time state champion in Kansas, you go to Oklahoma State, you know, there's a strong, I don't know, like, other than Pat, what it is, but I feel like there's a strong connection between this Arkansas uprising and Oklahoma State. You know, talk a little bit about, you know, the things you learned from Coach Smith that you're taking into the practice room with you every day now.
Yeah, you know, I think the tie is very much, we're so close to Oklahoma. And we didn't, and for so long, our state didn't have an identity in wrestling. We didn't even have wrestling until 2008, right? So I think the influence for me from John is really his mentality, and the way that he approaches training, and the way that he his mindset is towards competing, towards winning, towards being successful. Like, you could probably do an entire 30 for 30 series on John Smith, mm-hmm. and just how he approached every single day and listening to him. I think one of the big things I took from him was, you know, he preached a lot about complacency and how complacency can really kill you. How it can really crush you, you know, especially during my time there when I got there, like right at the peak, we just won four in a row and then we were doing okay. And then we had a really bad year and then we came back. And then as I was coaching, we were kind of back in the top two, taking second a couple times. And so he talked a lot about being complacent and being okay with where you're at. I think that was one big, you know, one big thing. I think the other thing was just when you listen to him talk about his technique and the skills, there's an intensity behind it that people don't understand. And when he shows it, you know, he's 46 years old, hitting low singles or hitting elbow high crotches or, you know, showing the hand fight. And the intensity is just crazy high when he does it. And you're like, I got to match that. And I think that intensity and that complacency, you know, type mindset of we're not going to go there really helped me as a coach shape and mold who I was going to be, you know, moving forward. And, you know, how do you manage that? Watching him manage it, watching him talk in the locker room after every match and going through every wrestler, and you're just like, you know, how did you remember all that? Like, how did you remember all 10 matches and every second and where every person struggled? And I think that his intentional mentality with us in that, and his intentional mentality of being very intense in the things that he did, and his very lack of understanding for being okay with where you're at, really helped drive me as a coach and as an athlete.
Yeah, Nick Saban talks a lot about that too, complacency. And yeah, you know, I love nothing more than putting on like an hour long Nick Saban rant. And it's, you know, whether I'm working out or whatever, it's awesome. And it's, you know, obviously Coach Smith's in that same category. So when you first got to Oklahoma State, you were a cadet national champ, but were you coming in, you know, expecting to start? Like, who were you battling with? What was your first 2 years like at Oklahoma State? Maybe we'll start there.
Yeah, well, I came in with a very large class. We were number one class in the country. I think there was 14 of us. And I was, you know, Fargo champ, but probably one of the more least decorated wrestlers in there. And by no means am I downplaying, like I was still pretty good. You know, I was top five in the country coming out of high school, but I was still like in the bottom fourth compared to my teammates. And I was expecting to be a 65 pounder. I got John Smith on that one. I wrestled 71 my senior year of high school, and I'm sitting down and I'm like, coach is going over the weights, and I'm, he's like, "What weight are you going to wrestle?" I was like, 65. He's like, "No, you're not. You're going 57. I was like, "All right," you know. And I haven't seen 57 since, you know, my junior year of high school, which, you know, it is what it is. John Smith tells you, you know, tells you you're going to do something, you're going to sneak and do it. So,
were you a little shocked when you heard that though? Because that's a little bit of a reputation from that program. Like they pull a lot. Like that's.
I was extremely shocked. I was very naive to the wrestling world. Like my dad wrestled in high school, but wasn't like my first time going to NCAAs was 2003 when they were in Kansas City, 2003, 2004. And that completely opened my mind. Like I didn't understand all of that. So I didn't understand the reputation of cutting weight, which to me, I didn't care. I was just happy to be there.
Yeah.
So initially I was with Johnny Hendricks. Like that was the guy I thought I was going to be competing against. And I was pumped. I was like, this guy's got 1 year left. I'm going to go in. And I was like, if I can, you know, beat him half the time, like I'm pretty stinking good. And so I ended up competing against a guy by the name of Newey McSpadden, who's a tough dude, you know, round of 12 guy a couple times. And so my, you know, my first year was like, I just wanted to be a part of everything. Like we would have weights in the morning and I would come in and there would be Espo and Pendleton and Tyrone Lewis and Daniel Cormier and Steve Mako, and training for the Olympics, you know, training to make a world team. And I would just sit and watch them the first couple of weeks. Like I'd sit and I remember there was a little crash pad right when you walked in the wrestling room. I'd have my arms crossed just like this. And I would just watch. And I was like, dang, I was like, this is way different than anything I've ever experienced. And so, I remember John, he was like, you want to join us? And I was like, yep, I do. And so my schedule every day, my freshman year was I'd either go to weights. Okay. And if I didn't have weights or after weights, I'd be training with Espo, you know, getting his morning technique drills, whatever he wants. Then I'd come back at 2 o'clock and I'd wrestle with Zach. And then I'd go to practice at 3:30.
Oh my God.
That was my schedule every day. And it didn't matter. Like, that's what I did. I was there. And I think that helped project me really quick. I think that being able to do and understand that, like, I can be successful if I attach myself to these guys, really helped me. And so my first year after redshirt was tough. You know, I lost my wrestle off and I'm battling back and forth. I kind of won the spot for a good portion of the season, got hurt a couple times. Came back, lost my spot like 2 days before Big 12s. And, you know, that was pretty brutal. That was pretty heartbreaking for me. Cause I had never, you know, I mean, I was a true freshman starting both ways on the football team. I was a true freshman starting in wrestling, like, you know, in high school. And I had never not been the guy ever. Like that just wasn't a thing for me. It didn't cross my mind. It didn't I didn't know any different. And so that was a really hard, that was a hard confidence moment, you know, like what do you do? And I just remember I was like, I'm never going to let this happen again. And I came back the next year, I won the spot and, you know, never looked back.
Who beat you out that year for the spot?
Newley McSpadden.
Newley McSpadden, same guy. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's, and that's a crucial turning point, right? Like there's a lot of stories of guys, you know, even Pat Smith, right? His freshman year, he, you know, his first couple months in, he tells a story of him calling his dad. He's like, "Dad, I'm not ready for this. I made a huge mistake." And I think anyone who's pushed themselves, whether it's in wrestling, whether it's in business, maybe even in parenting, like you put yourself in these positions. And at first it's so much of a challenge. You're like, I don't know if I'm ready for it. So did you ever think about switching schools or leaving?
You know, I think that's the one really positive thing I had about myself was I didn't know how to quit. Like even on the days where I was like, this sucks so bad. Like I didn't know how to like walk up to coach and be like, I quit, or like that just wasn't a part of me. And I think that's what kept me going. Mm-hmm. I never thought of switching schools. It just wasn't a thing. Like, you know, if you transferred, you had to sit out, blah, blah, blah. And just transfer never really crossed my mind. It didn't. Like, I think probably saying, okay, if I'm going to do this for the next 4 years or your next 3 years or whatever, like, I got to man up because this is not sustainable. Mm-hmm. And I think I had those conversations with myself more than I had, I'm going to quit or I'm going to transfer. And, you know, I think that was
I'm getting fired up, coach.
I think that, you know, I just think God really blessed me with that, like, inability to follow through with the thoughts, you know, like, I have a lot of thoughts. Sometimes I'm like, what am I doing? Like, this sucks. Like, why? But then I have the reality and the truth of, like, I'm not a quitter. I'm not quitting. I'm seeing this through.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to have to kick me off the team before I quit. And I think that really helped me a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, by the time you got to a senior, blood round, and then, you know, Oklahoma State back in the top four, which we all know that top four is, like, it's coveted, you know, and it's really tough to be there. And, you know, that had to be pretty cool to finish your career with, knowing that you got some crucial team points, you were battling, and the team got back onto that top four. Is that right? You guys got top four your senior year?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's, let's see, right there. That's our team trophy from that year. So, yeah, that was that. You know, that was a tough time. Like, people don't understand how tough it is to go from top four, or, I mean, you know, winning four in a row and coming in, and that's your expectation as a freshman, is I want to help win the fifth, and to be in
16th. Still waiting on the fifth.
Yeah, right, which is a whole other conversation. But, you know, just bearing that weight a little bit and having to go through some of the things that we went through, and it was not fun for a while. There was no fun involved in it. There was no days off. There was no rest. There was no peace about the situation. It was, we freaking suck because we're not winning, and we better figure it out. And I 100% can just tell you stories on stories for days about some of the hard things we had to do as a team. Just,
you tell us it one.
Well, so we lost to Mizzou, and this was like at the kind of the rise of Mizzou. You know, they had had Askren already. They were pretty tough. And John made us come back in and work out. I don't know the time. I just know we were in there forever. And during that time, he made Pendleton and he made Tyrone. And I want to say Espo. And maybe, maybe Coach Guerrero at the time, he made him cover up everything OSU in the room. So when you walked in the room, we weren't allowed to wear Oklahoma State stuff. You couldn't see the national champs on the wall. Everything that said Oklahoma State was covered. And he was like, you guys haven't earned the right to wear this stuff, to wrestle for this school, because of the way you competed. And that was a rough period. That earning that back was a tough, tough time.
Wow. I've never heard that before. Thank you. And I'm sure there's like hundreds of those, you know.
That's just that was just like a couple weeks of our life.
Oh, that wasn't just that day. The stuff was covered up for a week or two.
I mean, probably a month. I mean, it was forever.
Oh my God. That's crazy.
Yeah, it was,
man, Coach Smith has such a high bar. You know, I've told this story probably 10 times in this podcast, but I was, you know, it was probably 10 years ago. DC did an interview, and he was, you know, going to the Worlds, and he wasn't winning. And Coach Smith goes up to him, and he's like, Daniel, I don't understand. He's like, you're doing all this work. Why aren't you winning? And Daniel's like, I'm trying. You know, it's like, it's such a high bar, you know, and it's just, those stories are awesome.
Yeah. He's, you know, it's win or nothing. Like, it's kind of like the Ricky Bobby, like, you're either first or you're last. Like, that's the type of attitude it is.
Now, when you were there, you were on some teams with some of the, you know, this is a Chicago podcast. I'm right in the heart of Chicago right now. You were with some great Illinoisans, Mike Benefiel, John Morrison, and now and Albert White. You have Albert White and your staff. Right there, we're talking 11 state titles. God knows how many Fargo titles. I mean, man, tell me how you got Albert White down at Little Rock.
Well, you know, Albert was a good friend of mine, very, very close to him in college. You know, we even compete against each other for a short period of time when we were at Oklahoma State. I think that I was looking for someone who could bring some value to the program. You want people you trust. I think the hardest part about college coaching is there's a lot of just, you can't trust a lot of people. And we don't pay a lot, you know, just candidly. Like,
yeah.
This is someone looking for an opportunity. And, you know, Albert left Oklahoma State, was a junior college coach for a year and a half, 2 years, went back to Oklahoma State, you know, kind of found his way into the high school coaching ranks and have been trying to get into college for a while. just wasn't a lot of good right times for him. And I just remember thinking, like, I could go try to get a big name. I could go try to get someone. And don't get me wrong, Albert is a big name. Right?
I was going to say, if you're coming up to recruit some Chicago studs, Albert White's as big as any of them.
As anybody, right?
Anybody.
And so, but I, you know, I kind of meant like guys just come out of college that were national champions.
Right,
you know,
trying
to snag those guys. That doesn't mean you're going to get hard workers. Doesn't mean you're going to get people who are capable. And so, you know, I love my time as a high school coach. Most valuable time of my life when it comes to learning how to get things done, learn how to wear a lot of hats. And I was like, this can be the type of guy that I trust. It can be the type of guy that knows what hard work is and he's looking for an opportunity. And I just called him up and I was like, what do you make? And he told me, and I was like, all right, never mind, bye. And he's like, no, tell me what's up. And I was like, well, here's the opportunity. Here's what we're paying. You know, fortunately we've increased it since then, but, he was like, all right, I'll come down. Like, let me and my family come check it out. And so he came and checked it out. I was like, if you want it, it's yours. Let's go. And he did, he took it. And, you know, the rest is kind of history,
man. And you look at Nasir Bailey, you know, one of the, I don't know if he or Stephen Little signed with you guys first or what their rankings were coming out, but you know, Nasir Bailey, one of the top recruits to come out of Illinois in quite some time, and you guys got him. And you know, you got to think there's a little bit of connection there with Albert and Nasir. So it's like that's already paying dividends just on the recruiting front, not to mention in the room and all the confidence that comes with someone like that.
I mean, 100%. Like, Albert got us in the door. He got us, you know, there. We end up getting Nasir's older brother, Bilal, who's here. You know, who's tough dude, come out of Illinois too, is really, you know, really good. And so, yeah, he definitely got our foot in the door, but he's excellent in the room. He's a really good room guy. He teaches very well. He understands how to communicate to the guys very well. And those are some of his best assets.
And you mentioned you coached at Stillwater High School. So just to follow your tree a little bit. So you wrestled Okie State. Looks like you were a GA for a couple years. And then at that point, how does GA work in wrestling? Like, you can only do it for a year or two? Like, is there restrictions on it?
Well, I was more of a training partner, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I mean, I was there every day. Coach gave me a lot of responsibilities. I got to do a lot. But I think a couple of years had gone by, and, you know, I was still a little struggling with how my career ended. I didn't know what direction I wanted to go. I was supposed to go back and, you know, run the family business when John talked me into coaching, which it didn't take much. It took just one conversation to do that. But, so you know, we're 2 years down the road and I'm like, Coleman made the, you know, got the Olympic bronze medal. And I'm like, well, there's probably not going to be an opportunity for me to be a volunteer anymore. Cause that, you know, that was kind of the next step up. Cause back then you had volunteer assistant coaches. You didn't have three assistants. And so I was like, you know, I really wanted that position, kind of talked to John about it. And then Coleman got it, which I knew was coming. And so I just told John, I was like, I got to do something for my future. I can't keep, I always joked and said, make two meatballs a month. You know, like I have a wife, I have a kid. Like I work three jobs. Like I got to move on, you know? And I was like, well, you know, I know if I go get my teaching degree, I can at least have a plan for the rest of my life if it doesn't go the way that I want. And so when I got my teaching certificate, I was talking to a couple of schools. You know, I was thinking about going to Perry High School in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. I was talking to Ronnie Delk at the time. And then Stillwater jumped on, and it just seemed like a better fit for me. And so, you know, Doug Chesbrough, who is the son of Tommy Chesbrough, is the head coach, or was the head coach there before Ethan Kyle. And he, you know, brought me in. They hired me. Doug let me just kind of run things. And Doug was a great mentor to me and taught me a lot. Like, you know, it was just an unbelievably valuable time. We could have a whole podcast about why every college coach should coach wrestling for 2 years at the high school level before they go to college, you know.
And wait, you're that. Around Oklahoma royalty, Smiths, Chesbros. Man, that is, I didn't know that he was a part of that program. So So you come in and yeah, I mean, at that point, you know, Stillwater High School now is super legit, and I'm sure it was then, but you also have guys who are just coming out who maybe don't have college aspirations, right? So you're working with those guys too. What was it like going from one of the top programs in the world in Okie State to now coaching at the high school level?
You know, I say this is where I found my purpose. This is where I found my my niche in coaching of where I knew where I began to really love it. You know, I had Joe Smith, Cade Brock, Chandler Rogers. I had all Alex Derringer's brothers who were just studs. I had Tristan Moran, who ended up going on and being an All-American at Wisconsin. We finished the year like eighth in the country. It was us, Edmund North, and I think it was Sand Springs. We were 8, 9, and 10 in the country to win the state title.
Wow.
Like, you know, I mean, it was
your high school roster, those guys.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I had kids that, you know, I had a kid that they went to Army that wrestled, you know, had another kid that was, we had like 5 Fargo All-Americans from Stillwater that were on the roster. And I think half of them didn't get to wrestle because we had all these other studs on the team. And so, but back to your point, like,
that's crazy.
It was fun, man. Like, we had a pin bin thing where we got paid for every pin that we did and we threw shirts out, and we got so many pins that year, we couldn't have done the pin bin next year. Like, it was like, we broke the bank. It was cool. We had a blast that year, but
how'd you find your purpose there? What was it?
So I just remember, like, we had a guy by the name of Pete Pickens, and Pete was an unbelievably hard worker, but just like, sometimes didn't know where, if his feet were going left and his arms were going right. Like, he struggled a little bit. And I just remember, like, I was watching Cade Brock and I'm like, man, that dude like fires me up. Like, this dude wants it bad. Like, he wants it really, really bad. You had Chandler, who was just going through some of the emotional struggles of having hard matches for the first time. You had Joe Smith trying to just wrestle through the dynamics of being John's son. You know, you had Tristan Moran, who was trying to find his way in the world. First day of practice, beats Cade Brock, slaps him in a pin, and just kind of beats up on him. And I'm like, where did this kid come from? I didn't even know who this kid was, you know? And so there was like this wide variety of feelings and emotions. And I just remember what really sealed the deal for me was, I was like, if we're going to win a state title, we need every single person on this team, you know? And we need to have 14 guys at state. We need to have 6 or 7 in the finals. We got to have, you know, 5 state champs. We got to have, everyone else has got a place for us to win a state title. And so I was like, it's hard for me to ask these guys who are just here to be a part of the team to work hard when I don't really know them. And I was like, I got to get to know these dudes. So I spent some time getting to know these guys and communicate with them and, you know what their world was. And I remember Pete Pickens at regionals came off and he lost the match to place to go to state. And I, like, we had worked so hard to get Pete, and he came up and he hugged me and he was like, I love you, coach. He was like, I'm so thankful for you. He's like, I did everything I could. And he's like, I had nothing, you know, left to get to where I wanted to be. And I think at that point, like, my purpose was, I was really good at gathering people, communicating a message, and helping people really hone in on who they are, what they stand for, and buying into a bigger purpose. And I was like, you know what? That's what God's called me here for. Like, I need to be sharing my faith to these guys. I need to be directing them in the right direction as human beings first, not wrestlers. You know, guiding them to understand that, like, you know, you got to show up, you got to work hard, you got to do the right things, and going above and beyond. And I think that's where it all clicked for me as a coach.
Well, I think the key thing you said there that sticks out to me is you got to know them. And that is, it sounds so obvious, but, you know, that's the thing where, like, whether it's, hey, before practice, after practice, just sitting there chatting, like, getting to know their goals, you know, what are their aspirations? Like, that's just common. That's just good basics. But I don't know how many people are doing that at all levels, you know? So that really stuck out to me.
Yeah, it was really cool. I remember a lot of hard conversations, a lot of cool conversations, a lot of conversations about bad choices. We had a lot of those. And I think as a coach, it's easy to just to be like, don't do that again. Like, that was dumb. And then walk off and, like, be done with it, right? But understanding someone's mindset and their thought behind why they made that choice and letting them come to their conclusion that that's a really bad choice is a much better way to do it.
And it's tough because the more you get to know people, you know, you realize their, you know, their home life may not be so good, or some of the fears they're dealing with, and it really breaks your heart a lot. So you gotta carry that, right? And then you're even more emotionally tied in. So talk about that guy that didn't make it to state, like that's hurting you as much as it's hurting him, if not more, you know?
Yeah. And there's a lot of cool stories where, you know, we had kids sleeping on other people's couches and not knowing how they were going to get school and eat and do different things and being a part of those kids' life. And, you know, like half of my wrestlers end up going to the church that I went to, and I ran the youth group. And so I spend a lot more time with them outside of the wrestling room too, and getting to know them that way as well. But yeah, those are really cool moments that no one ever knows about, that you just don't know. You don't know when you're going to help change the course of someone's life.
And then how did it come about where you got to UNC with Coleman?
So Coleman gets the job as assistant coach. And at the time, the head coach was CD Mox. He had told him, bring who you want with you. And so, I mean, I don't know if I was the first call, but Coleman started calling me. And I was like, I was a little set in my ways. I didn't think my wife was going to want to leave Oklahoma. We were pretty newly married, and we were pretty open and honest, but there's still that time where, like, you're like, I'm not sure if this is the right thing to bring up right now. And I just remember he kept calling me, and I was like, no, absolutely not. You know, not doing it. I got a good thing going here, which, I mean, is really dumb in hindsight, but God works.
You said flat out no at first.
Yeah, I mean, you can ask him. Like, I told him no 7 times before I said yes. And it was just really dumb. Like, I'm really stubborn, but, you know, just that, I mean, we could go on and on about that forever, but I told him no 7 times. And, on the 8th time, when he called, you know, the baseball coach at Stillwater High, it was just a really cool God moment. He, like, we're starting school for the second year and we're doing our all school assembly and we're walking back, and he's like, coach, can you come to my office real quick? I need some help. I think we're moving cabinets or something. And he was like, I feel like I'm supposed to tell you this story. He starts telling me the story. So he was over here in Arkansas as a football coach, baseball coach. Kind of when, like, that the RPO offense came about, and, you know, a lot of it came out of Springdale and that area. And he was a part of that group and that movement. And I guess he had a buddy that was a high school coach that kept, like, one of the, I believe it was Gus Malzahn, was trying to get him to come be his OC when he first left, right? Because he coached up here in Arkansas. And so so he was like, this guy turned down a lot of OC jobs. He turned down a lot of, you know, offensive analyst jobs, quarterback coaches. He's like, you know, because he just didn't go tell his wife, like, this is what's best for our family. We got to do it. I was like, what? I was like, why are you telling me this right now? He's like, I don't know. I just feel like I'm supposed to tell you the story. And now he's begging to get a job, and he can't get a job, and he's miserable. And, like, he just is totally heartbroken over the fact that he didn't do what he should have done a long time ago. And I was just like, I just started crying.
I just got chills, man. Dang, that's right? Crazy.
And so, because I had spoke to several other Division I schools about jobs, and I turned them all down, I was, you know, I looked at some Division II head jobs and stuff. And I just was kind of hot because our high school team was really good. And I just remember I called my wife and I was like, I'm taking the rest of the day off. We need to go to lunch. We need to talk about this. And I just called her. And I mean, we, you know, we went to lunch and I told her the story, and she was okay. And she didn't really say much. And we went back to, you know, she went back to her job and I went to practice and got, you know, went home that night, and she left it. And I still have it. It's right up here on my desk, but she left me a note. She said, if you want the job, take it. I trust you. And so the next day I called Coleman back and I was like, we're in. I was like, we're coming. And, you know, at that point I had to tell him I was leaving Stillwater High. And that's kind of the story of how that happened.
So you went right then in that August. You didn't do another season at Stillwater.
I didn't leave till I think it was October or November, but okay. It's a lot harder process to leave a high school job.
Did you ever go to Coleman and say, did you talk to that baseball coach, or was that total randomness?
No, I don't think, it was 100% randomness, because Coleman didn't have an idea who he was. You know, Coleman, he was new. I was new at Stillwater High. So there wasn't a lot of connection there. Yeah. No, I didn't. I just truly believe that God put it on his heart to you know, get that check in his spirit to be like, I need to tell this guy that story. I don't know why, but I truly believe that.
Wow. That's awesome. What a story. And it's so relatable to everything in life. It's not just, you know, coaching or wrestling. There's a lot of parallels to that. The one thing I would kind of want to wind down with is I can tell just from the interview that, you know, not being at All-American your senior year, it seems like it sat with you for a while. And, you know, we're coming up on postseason here. And, you know, what's your message to the guys in terms of, one, how did you process that? You know, how long did it take you? Was it weeks, years? And how do you relay that to these guys that, like, have no regrets by the time, you know, the next 4 weeks comes and passes?
Yeah, it definitely stuck with me for years. Like, that was really hard for me. You know, and kind of looking back at my career, you know, losing the state finals. When I was a kid, I won a lot. I won, you know, I don't know, 6 or 7 kid state titles. I won the roller triple crown a couple times. And I won the Oklahoma Open as like a 7th or an 8th grader, beating high school kids, you know, which back then was a really tough tournament. I was just doing a lot of really good things. And so not accomplishing my college dreams was hard to put my head down at night. It was hard to, every single where I looked, I could just all I could think about. And so I think that was kind of my initial drive to coach, was like, I don't want people to feel what I felt. That's not a feeling that one wants to wake up or go to bed with and think about all day, every day. And my message to the team is going to be very much that you only lose if you don't go for it. You only don't accomplish what you want if you hold back. And if you're focused on simply winning the match or winning the tournament, you're going to miss the point. Like, or if you're wrestling and you're wrestling to not lose the match, you're missing the point. This is a competition. This is supposed to be fun to an extent. Like, you can't tell a wrestler it's supposed to be fun the whole time. Like, it's intense. But if you focus on the process of what wins for you, and you focus on, you know, scoring first, scoring next, scoring last, wrestling in every position, making his life really hard, like, the success happens because you have been a professional about what you've been doing all year long. And that's what we've done really well, from our weight to our nutrition to our sleep to our mental, you know, the our attitude, the way we approach it. Those are all things that we've done. We grinded through that hard time of late December, you know, through January. Like, the work has been done. So the moment that you think that you're tired, the other person is 10 times more tired. He's struggling 10 times worse because there's a good chance he didn't go through what you went through. And now it's just about outlasting and wrestling to win in every position and not wrestling to not lose and wrestling to score the next point. And that type of mentality and that type of attitude frees these guys up, because it's not about winning or losing. It's about how you win and how you lose. And in that moment, opportunities arise and you have a lot of margin for error and a lot of a space to make mistakes and still come back and win the match. And that's been the biggest difference for our team this year. And that's going to be that's been our message all year. And that's going to be the consistent message throughout the year.
Wow. It frees the guys up a lot, right? Yeah. They're not so tense. They're not so living or dying by each match. And man, Coach, it's been such an honor to have you on here. I'm ashamed that it's taken this long. I can't wait to get you back. I got another podcast in about 5 minutes with Frank Papalizio, who's got some ties to Okie State as well with his brother. But man, it's just so awesome what you're doing, and it's an example for other states, for other programs. And I just hope that, you know, you're down there for a while, because I got to imagine all these colleges are looking at what you're doing and thinking, we got to get the next Coach Erzman on the staff. We got to get him up here. So man, just congratulations. It's fun to watch. It's an honor to have you on the show, and just want to wish you the best of luck heading into this postseason.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time. I was always kind of jealous I wasn't on your podcast. So I was definitely excited when you reached out.
Anytime.
I was ready to be on it. I was ready.
And I want to come down and see the facility, see everything. Cause just when I was down there for that interview with Pat, it was literally, I left Stillwater at like 10 o'clock, hit some crazy construction, got in about 4 a.m., got to Pat's house at like 9 a.m., did the interview and had a flight out at 1. So I didn't really get to see it, but it's beautiful down there. And that's got to be I mean, these people who are in the Midwest, I mean, you guys have some mountains, you have some warmth, so you got a lot going on down there.
Man, instead of, you know, getting on board and saying, we'd love to have you, I'm just going to say, you won't come down. I don't believe it.
Love it, Coach. Thanks for coming on, man.
All right. Thank you.
Folks, thanks for listening to the Wrestling Change My Life podcast. To support the show, please go to our online store and check out our merch. It's store.wrestlingchangemylife.com. We have stickers, hoodies, t-shirts. Again, it's store.wrestlingchangemylife.com. Check out the merch store, and we'll see you next time on Wrestling Change My Life. Peace!